Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, April 17th, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network, or you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If you would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. You can also support us by purchasing the books, Government by Consent and Court Access in the Common Law, also found on the right-hand side of our website. Also, please consider supporting NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. And everyone should really get involved in our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Click on our link. You'll find that on the front page or the right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in our scripture reading. We're in the book of Ephesians, chapter 5, and this is being read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 5. Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children, and walk in love, as Christ also hath loved us, and hath given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savour. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you, as becometh saints. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. For this ye know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man, who is an idolater, hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them. For ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable unto the Lord. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. But all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light. For whatsoever doth make manifest is light. Wherefore he saith, Awake, thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. And be not drunk with wine, wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband.
Okay, Jen, before we get started, you know, I was wondering, you know, Firefox, I think, updated, and they used to have a presentation mode, which we've always used, which made everything larger. I don't know if anything's familiar with that, but I don't seem to find it anymore. It was the first time tonight I went to look for it, and it didn't work. Wonder if they moved that button to some other place. But anyway, if anybody's aware of that and knows how to get that presentation mode back up, let me know. Okay, Jen, do we have any questions or any announcements to be made? And I'm going to try changing over. Hang on a second. Okay, am I coming through this now?
A little bit lower, but you're coming through.
Okay, let me unplug the other one here. All right, I'll try to talk a little louder. Is this okay?
It's still lower than you were before, quite a bit, a different tone.
Now, you think I should go back to the other, or this is okay?
Well, this one is clearer. No, right. Let's try it.
All right, let's go to the questions. I'll see if I can't make it louder, see what I could do as you're...
Okay.
Do we have any announcements first?
None other than for the Wednesday night meeting, and I assume you're going to cover that.
Yeah, I'll be talking about that. Remind me at the end.
Okay. We have four or five questions for you then. In a previous call, you said that all court proceedings shall be recorded, stating that all parties shall have the right to do their own recording of all proceedings. I agree because I had requested a copy of an audio recording of two different hearings held back to back. One recording was done in three parts, with parts missing, and the second audio, the recording was so low it was not clear what was said. I then requested that the audio recording be transcribed, and both cases were transcribed as if there was one. Being that NLA has a membership that is over 10,692 members, will NLA and COSA, or COS, excuse me, consider drafting a petition to call on the White House to take action ASAP on the issues that matter to we the people, as some courts do not offer audio recordings?
Well, I don't know that we'll get anywhere with that, especially with this White House. I'm not too sure exactly what they're asking for. I guess maybe notification to the White House concerning the problem that they might do something. Is that what you're getting at, Ms. Chan? Because I'm not sure exactly.
Well, it's just that... In some cases, the recordings are so unintelligible.
Well, yeah,
they aren't even recorded. So can we take our own recording machines in, I think, is the question.
Well, that's the question. Okay, yes. Well, I do. I can't get too much of a discussion on that, but there's ways to do it. People have to figure that out. I don't intend on really using it other than to be able to go back and listen to the whole conversations, whatever took place in the court, and to be able to, you know, then maybe record what I think is important onto paper. You know, in other words, do a summary of what that particular hearing was about. On and for the record of the court, for whatever reason I might want to do that for, then maybe add on to that as far as, you know, holding a position or something. But the point is that you can get an accurate picture of what took place if you have your own recording. And let me give you an example. In a court case where the judge kept saying that they're not going to tell me the jurisdiction that we're in, and on three different occasions in one hearing. And the last thing I said, are you going to tell me the jurisdiction? And she said no, period. So I had that recorded, and I was able to put word for word exactly what took place. And they couldn't really go up against that, because and you would think that something like that would be something they'd want to erase, delete, or find some kind of a garbled problem or whatever. Eventually, they seem to clean these court cases up. They use a court case that I won in cases as if I lost in one situation. As a matter of fact, I'm working on a case, and he uses my court case against that court case. Because at the end of the day, you know, they gave me a release of lien, and they also gave me a letter of apology. Talk about the IRS here, and they also gave me in the letter of apology, they said that I wasn't required to pay taxes. I mean, this is an amazing thing to get. And that's how that court case ended. Now, they didn't do that in the court case. They sent that to me in the mail after the last hearing that we had. So I took that as a win. But then they did something else inside the court, and whatever it was, and they're trying to use that in other cases as if they won something there, when the truth of the matter is the opposite. It's just that information was not recorded in the court, that settlement took place. And that was probably my fault that I didn't file, because I didn't think of it at the time. I mean, if it ever happened again, I'll do it a different way, is that I would file back with the court on and for the record, communication between myself and the defendant, blah, 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 blah. I received this and put that into a copy. Matter of fact, maybe I might do that anyway. I might go back and see if they're not going to accept that. So, and they'll only delete it anyway, because that's what they do. It's a real serious problem we have with these courts. I mean, really, really serious. You don't have no rights there. You're not protected. You don't get justice. They don't even know what justice is. So it is a major problem. But, yes, you should try to record if you can. But they'll tell you you can't. If they catch you going in with a recording device, I guess the only thing they could do is just take it away from you and give it back to you when you leave. And I guess that's about it. We do have a right to bring a video camera into the court, but you have to notify them beforehand that you're going to do that. They might try to resist on that, but there's no good reason why they could resist. But if people wanted to try to do that, they could do it. But you have to give them sufficient notice to let it know this is what you're doing. Anyway, next question, I guess.
Okay, is there a gain control on your mic there, John? You're awful low.
No, let me change my mic back, and I'll play with this another day, see if I can't figure it out. Give me a second. Okay, how's that? Is this much better?
Much louder. I'll have to crank my volume.
I'll play with this another day and figure it out. I'd like to get a wireless this way I can move around more freely here. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay. In the table of contents for the class, Chapter 10, there is an IRS action case example. Is this an example of how the overall layout, the elements of how a case looks, when we are ready to initially submit and open a case? And do you have any other case examples that show the overall elements, the big picture of the layout of a case?
Well, I'm taking a quick look at it right now to see. Well, this is quite a long one. It's 33 pages, so this is pretty much the layout of a case that was used. Let me make sure I redacted things in here. I do want to go through this again to make sure everything's redacted. I might have an update on this, so I might change this still yet. But right now, this is what's in the course that's usable. This is a real case. It's going into the courts right now as we speak. It's a good example. But what I would suggest, though, is the facts of the case. I would change that in the way that I'm doing it. You want to do something where they have to admit or deny, and then do a memorandum of the facts of the case, or maybe better yet, do an affidavit of the facts of the case. Because you do want to make sure that it is sworn to, so it becomes a verified. I don't know that I've ever heard of a verified memorandum, so I don't know if we'd want to do a memorandum, but I think maybe, an affidavit, a sworn affidavit to the facts of the case. So I may alter this around to really update it in a way that I think might be a better way to bring this into the court. And that would also reduce the number of pages. Right now, this particular paper is 33 pages. And there's a lot of information that, again, could be done, some as a memorandum, some as an affidavit. So by the time we get to this chapter, which I think was 10, wasn't that what it was? Let me see if I get back to that. Yeah, it was chapter 10, I believe. Yeah. We got a while before we get to 10 and the case examples. I might go through all of these particular papers here and maybe do some updates. You know, you're always updating, you're always perfecting, you're always making better changes. Sometimes just to change a different word or a different phrase, maybe add a line or take away a line, just make it better. And that's the way of life of all things. I know when I wrote these books that I've written, I do want to go back and make some changes in it, update some things in it. I was talking with Brent about that, and he was chuckling because he says, yeah, you never get to that point where anything, you're really ever fully happy with your work. I mean, I know I've done good work, and I'm sure he has done too. Matter of fact, he has, but I'm sure he feels the same way. But you can always make it better. That never stops. It just is what it is. Very few things are done that can't be made any better. You know, for instance, I think the Declaration of Independence, for instance, I don't know that you can make that any better. And other documents. I think our founding documents, all three of our founding documents, are just extremely powerful. I don't know that you can make it any better. Although they did forget something in the original Constitution, and they corrected it with the 13th Amendment, which, of course, the enemy of liberty, the enemy of the people, robbed it and made it disappear, and people have forgotten about it. So, anyway.
Okay. In class, you are breaking down each element. It would simply be helpful to see the overall view so we can start visualizing where each element fits into what we initially submit as we open up a case. Yes, that's more of a comment than a question.
Well, we are going to get to elements. When we get over to, let me go up here a little bit. there's a lot to cover, and you can maybe try to approach it this direction or approach it from another direction. I want to give an overall, kind of picture of pleadings, and then we're going to go back and re-examine all these things from a different perspective and get a little more information on things. And I think elements of a particular cause of action, for instance, which is what they're talking about. So in the pleadings, and we went through a lot of things, and we'll be finishing off on pleadings this coming Saturday. And then after that, we'll be picking up on the causes of actions. And that's when we'll get into the more details of the causes of actions. That's when we're going to get to, let's say, if you're going up against someone for fraud, okay, then there are certain elements that have to be covered in order to get that whole picture and to state a cause of action properly. And we'll go through those elements. And I think we probably have about 30, maybe more. causes of actions, but that's not all the causes of actions that exist. I would think that causes of actions ultimately are limitless. But one of the key things, in my opinion, and especially which stands in a court of record, you know, a common law court, if it was going, you know, if you had a real court of justice going on, the main focus, you could take a roll of toilet paper and a pencil, and write your affidavit on toilet paper, and have it notarized, and that's all that's necessary to make a prima facie case. That's it. Period. You don't need anything else. But of course, you know, there's a process, there's procedure. We should follow along. Everybody follows the same logic. It makes sense. But the point is if a person has a situation and they want to go into the court and deal with it, they have every right, if they don't understand how things work, to be able to just make the statement. And basically, you know, you have to make the point that if you were injured, and the ultimate bottom line on that is for every injury, there must be a remedy. I don't think it gets any more difficult than that. Now, of course, they would, you know, going into the courts today, they'd give you a real hard time about all this because they don't want people in the court. They just want bar attorneys because they can't control people. And they can't take them into the back of a room and tell them the way, the reality of things. Whereas they would obey that reality as told by the judge, this is the way it's going to be, this is the way it's going to go, you're not going to bring this up, you're not going to bring that up. Do we all understand each other? Good. Let's get back into the courtroom. And generally speaking, that's how conversations might go in the back room. It's problematic. They can't take the people in to do that. Because that's not going to go over very well. Besides that, they have a personal thing involved in the case. It's their case, and they want justice. And obviously, they're just not going to do that. The threat, of course, because this is all in one accord. The threat, of course, is the loss of their quote-unquote license that doesn't really exist. And, my position or thinking is they can play their license game in their civil law courts, and that's fine. But they can't come up against someone that's coming into a court because, as far as under common law is concerned, because that's a whole different story. There is no license to become, in order to get into a court. Matter of fact, we wrote a paper on this one here, and we probably will cover that in our class in a memorandum. But anyway, next question.
Okay, you can take a break, John. The next question is for Terry, and it is, can you tell me more about the Thursday night discussion group?
Group is just where we get all together, anyone who wants to come in and talk about a topic. If you're asking me questions like you asked John, expect to be disappointed because I don't know as much as John. And it's just for everyone else to talk as much as they want on whatever topic they want to talk about. And it's pretty open. And all you got to do is show up and speak your mind. Think that answers it?
Okay, very good. Back to you, John. I had a case in the federal courts, which then went to the Circuit Court of Appeals, and then to the U.S. Court of Appeals, and was denied, which I then had until 2/10/23 to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court and did not. On 3/9/23, I sent the federal court judge of the case a notice and demand for their oath, bonds, and so forth. That was received on March 14, 2023. As of today, there has not been a response. Should he have responded, being that he was the federal court judge and is no longer in this case, or should I not have sent such?
Well, I'm not too sure exactly why you sent that to the judge. I mean, I didn't hear any specifics, and if the specifics still stand, then I guess you could still do that. They have a duty to answer that. They do everything they can not to answer that. They'll ignore it and everything else that goes along with it, and it's up to the people to really press the issue upon them and force them to answer. Someone sent me, I got this from a couple of different people actually, a copy of a quo vanto concerning the oaths. As a matter of fact, when we came into the room earlier, I think that was being played. For instance, Kamala Harris, there's no record of her taking an oath. There's no oath on record. And numerous other people, many people on a federal high level that have not given oaths, they've not taken oaths, or at least they have not been posted anywhere or recorded where they should be recorded. And so someone did a quo vanto concerning that, which is interesting. And again, you know, they laid out a lot of the stuff that I laid out. Matter of fact, I heard it, you know, it was read. I'm going back and I'm going to break it down and take a good look at it and see what codes and other information that they put in there that I might want to, you know, also put into the paper that I have. I'm getting ready to send a writ quo vanto to the doorkeeper of the United States Supreme Court, who has prevented our papers from getting into the system and getting up before the Supreme Court. And of course, that in itself was a reporting on subversion. And so that became a crime for that particular clerk, who is the doorkeeper, to prevent that paperwork from going through. And, you know, I also wrote a letter or a paper for a file on demand and explaining part of that, what this paper is about. So they must have read that. And that makes them guilty of a crime at that point. But even if they didn't read it, they should have read it, and it still makes them guilty of a crime. And but anyway, I'm going to pursue for oath and bond and then refile the paperwork again.
Okay. If I was right, this is a follow-on question, if I was in the right standing, would I file the quo vanto in the state circuit courts or the federal courts, and to whom else, as I now see that it says on PACER that they, the federal courts, are not to receive any further documents related to this case, and clarify with the oath and bond enforcement, was it suggested that one is to send an affidavit along with a copy of the previous certified mailings?
There seems to be a lot to try to answer this particular question. I can say a couple of things, though, here. a quo vanto, or a demand for oath and bonds, which is a notice and demand outside of the court, inside the court, you'd want to do a quo vanto, and that's kind of the difference between the two. And you could do that upon anyone who is supposed to have oath and bonds, and they have to show, you know, produce it. And, of course, the purpose of that is doing that is for the sole reason because they are breaking the law. They're hindering justice. They're blocking you or whatever the case may be. So it would be appropriate to file it upon any person that has some kind of power and authority and is abusing that power and authority by blocking things. And, you know, preventing certain things from going in, depending on certain situations, for instance, someone like a clerk, it becomes a crime when they return the item unlawfully and refuses to allow justice to go. It's, as far as I'm concerned, it's an obstruction of justice, and those might be good words to use, depending on the situation. I know there was a lot of parts to that, and I'm trying to think of what else I might want to answer here. I don't know if you want to read that again, and maybe I can pull something else out of that.
Okay, I can go through it again. If I was in the right standing, would I file the quo vanto in the state circuit courts or the federal courts?
Before we go any further, I'm not sure what they mean by the right standing. If you're one of the people, you have a standing. Now, maybe that person means if they're in the right jurisdiction. I don't know. So, but go ahead with that.
Well, I think she's referring to the cases that she just filed. So if she was in the right standing there.
Yeah, but the right standing, I'm presuming they mean if they're in the right jurisdiction. You see, standing is one thing. Standing is having the we'll call it the right to make the claim, whatever it may be. And as being one of the people, we can make any claim we want. You know, they can't say that we don't have standing. I know Robert Schultz has been pulled, thrown out of a lot of court cases when saying he doesn't have the right, he doesn't have standing. And that's a game they play, that word, in my opinion, with standing. You know, because I think in one case they mentioned to him that, Well, you know, a lot of people fall into that category. You're just one person, so why should you have standing? And they said he didn't have standing. It's irrelevant. We're in a republic. We're not in a democracy. We don't have to have 50% of the people with us or more in order to get justice. One person could stand against the whole population in a republic because they have rights. And so, again, it's a game they play. And that's a problem. As a matter of fact, and we're going to talk a little while about looking for people to help us here. And one of the things I'm thinking of doing, really, is gathering names of different individuals that have a voice somewhere. Like just today when I was sitting down while listening to some things on YouTube, and I saw Carlson, and who else did I see? There was someone else. Musk, they were having a conversation, and they brought up democracy. Both of them mentioned democracy, that we're in a democracy. And I saw Carlson on some other thing, Tucker Carlson, where again he said a democracy. And every day I hear somewhere, someplace, where people are talking, whether it's judges, elected individuals, congressmen, and none of them call us a republic. They call us a democracy. And I think we have to get a campaign, a writing campaign, of letters to these individuals to let it be known that, hey, stop calling us a democracy. A democracy is two wolves and a lamb, as Benjamin Franklin put it, deciding on what's happening for, you know, what's coming up for dinner. And it's a republic is a well-armed lamb contending the vote. Again, this is something that's problematic. I mean, everybody seems to think we're a democracy, and that's why we have a problem. I mean, that was the purpose of the Democratic Party, by the way, which started in 1801. Became the people that really was a faction inside, a major faction inside of the Federalists, which were really there to destroy the work of our Constitution. And that was pretty much prevented, thankfully. And the Bill of Rights really did the major preventing of the problems that were created by these people. But they were the ones that became the Democrats. They formed the first real party in an official way called the Democratic Party in 1801. And ever since then, it's been nothing but destruction to our republic. You know, when we look into the law, anybody using a position of power and authority from within our government in order to destroy our republic is guilty of treason or subversion. And there is U.S. code saying this. Anybody who teaches these things or uses their platform of elected position in order to bring these things about to destroy our republic. I mean, people can talk about a democracy they could say anything they want, okay? But people in power that have authority, that have political positions that were elected or appointed, they can't. They can't, because for them that would be subversion. But people can talk about anything they want, you know. All right. Anyway, what's next on that, Jan? Did I drop?
No, I'm muted. Do you want me to read the rest of that question or the next one?
Yeah, we'll go to the next one.
Okay. This is the last one. When one decides to not be a part of the fraudulent tax system anymore, is there something they should do to ward off any attacks by these evil people?
Well, again, you know, it's a dangerous situation. People are stuck between a rock and a hard place if they've been paying their taxes for a long time and all of a sudden stop. That's a big flag that's going to go up, and they're going to come down on you. It's difficult to remove yourself from the position, you know, from that situation. Not that you can't do it. You can do it. I know somebody who actually, there's an actual form that they have to remove yourself from the tax, believe it or not. And so there's a process. But that doesn't make it so, though, because when you file that form, they come down on you really even harder. And it doesn't matter. They ignore that form. They'll ignore what you say. It doesn't matter. So if you don't know how to defend yourself, it's a very, very dangerous thing. So I wouldn't advise anyone to do that. And I wouldn't advise anyone not to do it either. People have to figure that out for themselves. But I can say one thing. This will probably be the last year you'll be filing taxes. Because I can't, I just can't believe we're going to have to go through another year waiting for the military to take control and bring this nation back under a republic again. And once that happens, direct tax is unlawful. The IRS and the whole process is just all unlawful. So it's not going to exist anymore. People wonder, well, how is the government going to survive? How are they going to do this or do that? They need our tax money. Well, that's a lie. They don't need our tax money. That none of that money goes to benefit the people. All that money goes to benefit other countries. I mean, we see how they give that money away or benefit their agenda. For instance, maybe getting all these people with Black Lives Matter, for instance, that were arrested when they had all of this violence going on some year or so ago, to get them out of jail, to bail them out, that's where the money came from. All of the things that they use to bring their agenda forward, it costs money. That's where you're paying for with your IRS money, believe it or not. I mean, as far as like road taxes, building bridges and infrastructure and all that, that's all in the tax on fuel. Truckers pay a high tax on fuel because they're on the road, they're commercial activity, they got a lot of weight going down on these trucks, and that's why they limit the weight because, some roads are just built to a certain amount of weight coverage, however they estimate all that. But anyway, they pay taxes accordingly. I mean, and we pay taxes every time we drive on the road because we put gasoline in our cars, and a lot of that money in the gasoline is tax money. And there's sales tax, and there's all kinds of lawful taxes out there. It's all lawful. But the IRS tax on your income is not lawful at all. And it's the Constitution is clear. No direct tax, period. But again, to get out of that system is difficult, and I wouldn't worry about it right now. I think by next year it's just going to be gone. Is that it?
That was the the last question, John.
Okay. All right. We're going to be having a meeting Wednesday evening right here in this room at 9 p.m. I am correct in that there is nothing else that's going on a Wednesday night at 9, right, in this room? I don't know, Terry, if you would know that, or Eric.
Yes, that's the right time.
Okay, so
and that's Eastern.
Yeah, 9 p.m. Eastern. Right. We're going to have the meeting. And let me see if I can open this page. And basically, we're here to really, we've got quite a few people that volunteered, and we're going to get together for the first time to have a little bit of a meeting. We're not going to get too involved in a lot of details of a particular work or meet out some work right away. But basically, we're looking for people to help in various places on a national level. And these things, although it's voluntary right now, at some time in the future, hopefully soon, when we get some monies, these will become professional positions. They will be paid positions. But right now, it's voluntary. And so on Wednesday, we're basically going to get together to see who wants to do what kind of a committee. We're going to create we're probably going to approach this from building committees, subcommittees, just like we would build committees in the committees of safety. We'd have all these subcommittees, all education committee, the political committee, and so on and so forth. Well, we're going to kind of create committees too here, so to speak, and have groups of people working on things. For instance, we need district coordinators right now. Hey, how many district coordinators do we have that's active right now, Jan? Do you know?
Maybe five.
Okay, so we have five. We need at least 10 right now, 10 district coordinators. And as time goes on, we'll have to figure out how many we're really going to have. Right now, I don't think we're going to need more than 10 because we're still just in the beginning stages of building committees of safety. I'm not sure how many committees of safety we have. Eric, was it you that mentioned that we have a certain number of committees of safety, or was that someone else? I know that reporting was a while back, or whatever.
Yeah, there was someone else, but I did remember the number. Wasn't it around 100 or something?
You know, I was going to say that, but I thought that was kind of high. So, and that was a while ago. That was months ago. So hopefully we got 500, 200. I don't know. I mean, we need 3,000 committees of safety altogether because we want one for every county. You know, 10 people right now would be sufficient to be able to handle and deal with the communications with all of these different committees of safety. We'll have to see how the workload goes as people discover how many they believe they can handle at a time. You know, so maybe a one per state, maybe we'll have to have 50 district coordinators. So I really don't know. Maybe some states which are smaller, maybe less counties, maybe someone would handle, maybe one district coordinator might be able to handle two or three states. I don't know. You know, the state like Texas, which, goodness, they got, I don't even have, I think they got like 250 counties or something like that. They got a lot of counties in Texas. So that a state like that probably have two people. I don't know. But anyway, we got to figure that out. Well, we do need district coordinators, and district coordinators are the face of NLA to the community committees of safety, and particularly in communications with whoever is the chair of the committee of correspondence for that particular district, you know, that county. That job really is, again, communicating with these people, assisting them in any way they can with their committees of safety, connecting them with other people within the state as far as our membership is concerned, you know, passing on names and phone numbers of individuals that they can contact and assist or get them into the committee of safety or convince them to get committees of safety in other counties so they can work together. And help these people in any way we can, okay? And we'll get very specific. We'll have to write up specifics on this, on what needs to be done as far as your communication is concerned. But anyway, we need at least 10 people right now for that. We also need people, for instance, to NLA representatives to help find financial supporters and maybe recommend some fundraising ideas and maybe some other things that they can handle. But basically, that's kind of the focus there. We also need another NLA representatives and also to help define and schedule interviews for, you know, Gerard and myself for radios, podcasts, etc. We need people who are interested in working with us on research. We got a lot of researching we'd like to get done. And so people who might be interested in that. And again, we want to create a group of people for each one of these things. I don't know what the limit would be. We'll have to figure that out as we go. We'll have to detail in great detail. We'll probably write some handbooks or something, nothing large or anything, but some basic information on what exactly the job makeup is and how to approach things and certain knowledge that they want to achieve in order to maybe exercise whatever it is that they're doing. Obviously, the people that are district coordinators need to understand as much as possible. But nothing wrong with not knowing the answer to anything, to a certain question or a problem. You can always just say, hey, look, I don't know the answer to that one, but let me research it and we'll talk next week or whenever, and I'll get the answers. So that a lot of that will happen, and that's okay, and that's how it should work. I mean, we're all on the job training, we're all learning, and the more time we spend with these things, the better we'll get. We need paralegals and secretaries, some people to do some secretarial work, some paralegal work. We need people to work on the welcoming committees. And again, we need people who are maybe educators. I did see an email recently, someone who is an educator, and hopefully that person is going to volunteer, and hopefully others. You know, we'll have to discuss exactly what the makeup of that particular position is. But generally speaking, you know, I want to break down my books into school books, and people who are educators, they can help doing that. You know, we have to make a plan for our children, because we're in trouble. This nation is in trouble. We've lost a couple of generations, in my opinion. It's gonna be real weak for this nation another 20, 30 years down the line, when those generations that are coming through these woke taught schools and all this craziness, you know, what kind of people are we going to have to be able to, you know, run things? So we have to not only re-educate ourselves, we have to really focus in on educating our children and trying to find a way to salvage these people that are in college right now that are totally gone insane with the things that they're being taught. So we need people to work with us on some technical assistance, maybe. Social media groups, okay? And a fundraising group would work up there, like I said a little earlier here, with as a representative. So some of these things may be a little redundant that I got written here. Social media groups, people who use Twitter and Facebook, Truth Social, or any other kind of a social media thing we can go to get our message out and get a presence on those different platforms. So we need a lot of, and I'm sure there are other things we haven't thought about that people who come to the meeting on Wednesday might bring up. Well, how about a committee for this or that or the other thing? And so we'll have to look at everything. But we do need a lot of help. We are at a point, I think, sort of at the crossroads, I think. I hope we're at a point where we're going to hit critical mass. And so we'll get more people and hopefully we'll get more help. But we do have to be prepared for that, and we have to be able to get the information out to what it is that exactly what we're doing. And if I was to put this whole thing in a nutshell, it very simply is we're trying to help people to have government by consent. I mean, that's exactly what we're trying to do. And that's got to be an organic grassroots movement. We're here just to facilitate that movement, to educate those people, to communicate with them so that they can communicate with others as far as the county next door or the county across the United States from them, however they would work together. And so we're there to facilitate that communication, to facilitate an education, to assist them in any way we can, to make sure that they understand that we appreciate that they're free and independent individuals, and we won't get involved in the specifics of whatever it is that they do. But we certainly do hope that they'll build their committees of safety in such a way that is the same as the one next door to them or one that's in a county across the nation from them, so that we're really, you know, interchangeable, and that we see things from the same perspective, the same way, so we all have the same framework, so to speak. So anyway, Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, not Eastern Standard Time, but Eastern Time, we're going to have this meeting, which is 2 days from now, 9 p.m., right here in this room. If you're willing to help, we do need a lot of help. I don't know that, with the exception of bringing the gospel out, I don't know if there's anything more important that we can do in this life at this point in time than to bring our republic back and teach people how to do that. Okay, I guess that's all I got. I guess we'll open up to the Q&A. Nobody else has anything? Eric, Jan, Terry, anything else we need to bring to the attention here?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, we're going to go to a Q&A. If you're on a phone, *6 and a 1. If you have an app on a phone or whatever, any other app or browser, there should be a button to push to get into the queue. So we'll take our first caller. Doug from Colorado, you got the mic.
Thanks, John. I've been studying the committees of safety. I've read pretty much everything in that section online, and my issue is I know a lot of people that know what's going on. But nobody wants to get involved. They're all focusing on their own corner of the world, and how to get the very first step rolling here. I contacted Terry after the meeting on Saturday, and she was good enough to speak with me, but with the broken phone conversation and that, I just wanted to open it up a little more here, because to put out like a flyer or something, there's always somebody that wants to infiltrate or shut good things down from the beginning, in my experience. How do I get just a few people together to get this thing rolling, if you don't mind addressing that?
Well, you first of all, you have to find sort of a partner, someone who's interested in doing the same thing. And then between the two of you, is having meetings either on the phones or on Skype or over a cup of coffee if you're close by, or whatever the case may be, just have some discussions on plans on what you want to do and getting educated and how to do what it is that you want to do by reading the handbooks, for instance, maybe making some notes, bullet points, and it's kind of draw together a plan of how you want to approach things. We try to give as many tools, as many things as possible. The other thing is to get a list of all the people within your state. You can contact Jan for that, and he'll give you a list. And I'm sure Terry would do that too. But we'll get you a list, and we won't give emails because we don't want people blasting emails. It doesn't do anything anyway. You need direct contact. You'll find some phones, you won't get through to people. You have, a lot of times you have to leave messages. I'm going to ask someone. There's a friend of mine that has really worked on an entire state and has called everybody in their state, and I think they got some good experience, and I'm going to ask him maybe next Monday or the Monday after or sometime soon. Maybe he can come up and talk and give his experience and some thoughts and ideas and what's working for him. But he's hell-bent on really getting committees of safety on every county in his state, which hopefully we can find someone in each state that has that drive, that wants to really work on their state and say, we're going to get our state and get committees of safety in every county and make the connections and work together on issues that we need to work together on, and then work on our own personal issues within our own counties to get work done, so on and so forth. So hopefully that'll be helpful too. But anyway, once you get two people, you know, and you're getting some conversation going, then you'll be looking for another person, the third, the fourth, the fifth, and so on. It's up to the people. I mean, once you have maybe a half a dozen or a dozen people, whatever number you feel comfortable with, that's when you'll start planning your first real presentation on the committees of safety. And making a lot of phone calls to a lot of people throughout the state, not just people in your county or the counties next door to you, because those are the most important ones, of course, that you want to connect with first, but also connecting with people across the state, throughout your state. Let it be known that you're planning a presentation soon, and you'd like to invite them, and so that they can come in and listen, and hopefully consider doing the same thing within their county. That's one of the things, or one of the ways this person I'm talking about had done it themselves. So they've had their first meeting, and at that point now they're going to work on building this. Now, as far as problems with people coming in that are problematic, you're going to get that. It is what it is, you know. People with big egos, maybe sociopaths or whatever you want to call them, they'll come in and they'll want to try to take control, change directions. You might even have enemies that just want to, you know, just try to take it down. Most of the people will be reasonable and wanting to do what we're wanting to do. And collectively you work together, just make sure those people don't get positions of power. And not that there's positions of power, but positions of control. People think that the chairman could do anything. They can't. Matter of fact, we wrote up in our paperwork, you know, instead of needing two-thirds of the people to get rid of a chairman, it should just be popular vote. If a person is problematic and someone wants to bring this up to get rid of this person, you take your vote and you move another person into the chair. But again, the chair doesn't have any more power than anyone else. They just have one vote. And they should allow anything to be addressed, and no one should be prevented from speaking or bringing up an issue. That's where abuse could take place, is as a chairman or a co-chairman, those positions particularly. And again, when a person's a problem, just vote them out. Most people you'll find will be reasonable because they're there for a purpose. They're giving up time in their life to do something. They realize that there's a problem in the nation and they want to do something. But it is true, I would say that probably, I'm going to take it on the very high side, 98% of the people you talk to really, you know, they'll think it's a great idea and so on and so forth, and they'll complain about problems and things, but they won't step up to do anything. For whatever reasons, I don't know. I mean, maybe they're afraid. There are people who are afraid to step up. That could be one reason. I've gone to places, talked to people, and they complain about all the problems, and they hear about all these things, and when you offer a solution, crickets, nothing. And it's just a problem we have. It is what it is. But on the other end, maybe that's a good thing, because maybe only the serious people will respond, the people who really realize that there's a problem and really want to do something. And we do need the best as far as intentional is concerned. We don't need people with knowledge, because that's what we're going to give them. People need to receive knowledge. But we do need people with good intentions that really want to do something, and that's willing to go that extra mile to do it, willing to step up and do things. And that's going to take some time to find those people. But I would think within a couple of months at the most of working at this, you can get enough people together to really get a serious thing going, make a plan. On our website here, let me change this thing here. On our website, when we go to start a committee of safety, for instance, and you come up down to the handbooks and tools, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of information here. And a lot of things, a lot of tools you can use in order to educate people, in order to bring your first presentation together, and so on. So here's, for instance, a lot of instructional PDF documents. We have visual videos and PowerPoint videos that you can use, and maybe you can touch on a subject every time you come together, spend a small period of time just to talk, get educated in something and talk about it, especially in the beginning as you're building the committees of safety. But as you get going on and people, and you're starting to build these subcommittees and get more and more people involved, and then the new people coming in, they're going to miss out on a lot of good stuff. But you can send them out to watch certain videos, on their own and sort of catch up on the things that they had missed, like a presentation. I mean, we have a great presentation, for instance, on our welcoming page, which literally, you can literally play this presentation as your presentation right here, which is a seminar we did back in December of 2021. And so you could play this and stop it at certain periods, take a break or have a little bit of a conversation and move on to the next thing. We also have this particular breakdown done in pieces, and you could do this PowerPoint as a PowerPoint, or you could do them as PowerPoint videos. We have it put together in a lot of different ways to approach your first introduction. And what I was doing a while back was going out giving presentations. We did this with committeemen when we were doing the committeeman thing. And then we realized, as time went on, we realized we need to get away from the statutory committeeman. We realized that it was really a control system, and that's where we found the committees of safety. Gerard and I visited almost every county in New York to give a presentation about what we're doing here with National Liberty Alliance. We did it with the committeemen, and then we did it again going around the state talking to people about the grand jury. And then eventually, of course, we tapped into the committees of safety. And then we put it all together as time went on, of course. Anybody that can really get involved on that level would be good, because then you can give a lot of presentations. But you do invite everyone in the state, no matter where they're at. People will travel sometimes. I have people travel from other states to come to some of these meetings that we did here in New York. And, you know, we used to go down to Long Island, which is a trip from us, and we also would head out to the northwestern side of the New York State, which was a long trip for us. But we also had people coming from, you know, the other end of the state, all the way down to wherever we were given a presentation. So you will find, and those are the people that are interested. Those are the people that you do want to capture their attention and give them some good information, that they'll see that it's worthy to do what it is that we're doing. But it does take time. It does take work. Nothing comes for free. And but there is a great reward for it, because the reward for us is our heritage finally being adhered to and being able to be exercised. So, but it's going to, it is tough. No getting away from it. But we're here to do the work.
I appreciate that. And yeah, I've studied through the whole concept. First time I heard of committees of safety was from Ammon Bundy when they were going through their issues, and started studying into it, and now I've been through everything that you've got online here, and I've downloaded most of it, and I feel like I'm personally ready to move forward. I just can't get anybody to join me, and I just need to work on that harder, I guess. But
did you get a list from us of members?
Well, the COS list in Colorado had 4 people on it.
No, we'll give you a list of every member in your state.
That would probably be helpful, yeah.
Yeah, just get in touch with Jan or Terry. I think, Jan, are you the only one handling that, I think? You're muted if you're talking. Maybe he walked away.
He's looking for Colorado. I'll take care of him. He knows the number.
Who should people get a hold of, Jan or you, for that? I know Jan's been handling it mostly.
Yeah. I can do it for him. That's Doug in Colorado, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he'll give you a list. He'll give you the phone numbers. And you're going to find a lot of people that have fallen asleep. You're going to find people that don't remember. You're going to find people who get their machine, and they may or may not get back to you. But you will hit some. And, if you're being persistent with these things, and even, whenever you make a phone call, you should really get a log and make notes, so that when you make your second phone call, or maybe you have a second or third conversation, you remember what you spoke about. Because after a while, you don't remember who you spoke to what about who, to who about what, shall I say. So it does get, a little confusing. So you really need to keep sort of a log. And then you'll eventually find people. Sometimes you'll get a person that maybe joined up and fell asleep, that's been with us for years, and maybe they've come to some meeting, and then all of a sudden it clicks on them, and then they realize that this is what they need to be doing, and they get active. It is what it is. Once you get a few people going into this thing, and you have your first meeting, and your presentation, and then your first meeting, and if you end up in your first meeting with 15 or 20 people, well, that's good. And then, the big thing at that point is to bring to everyone's attention, okay, we need to grow. We need help. We need to get the word out. Everybody endeavor to bring at least one person with them to the next meeting, okay? And if you can bring more than that, fine. And that's how you grow. So as 12 can bring in another 12, that's 24, and 24 could bring in 48, and so on. You can grow pretty quickly that way. And so in 6 months, you can have an awesome amount of people if everyone is really working on it. But, you want to be able to feed these people. You don't want to do the same thing every meeting. You want to focus in on things. But you do want to educate the individuals that are coming in, the new individuals, to give them a presentation. And I would suggest to tell them, hey, look, you didn't hear the presentation. Why don't you go up online in the front page of National Liberty Alliance and listen to the seminar, because that's similar to the presentation we gave here, and then you'll be brought up to par on exactly what we're doing and all of the powers and authorities that the people have and how we intend and can to have government by consent. So that kind of gives the full picture there. And then every month people will be learning more and more, and you're encouraging people to come out and take the courses, because, we have to be educated. We're not going to be able to achieve our goals if we're not educated in how our nation works, how our government works, and how we the people have the power and the authority to do what we're doing and to force these people to behave and obey the people, you know. So anyway, it does take time.
Yeah, I finally feel comfortable with the meeting part of it because I've been through it all and I've downloaded most of it and I feel ready for that. It's just getting it kick-started. But one other thing I wanted to bring up about that is there were four COS leaders listed on the NLA website in Colorado. One of them, I won't say the name, but in Larimer County, which I believe Terry's involved with that group, but there's only a 7-digit number, no area code. Of the other three, I haven't been able to get through to, I've been trying for a couple of weeks. They don't answer their phones or return my messages. And one of them actually called me back and said, well, I'm not really with NLA or what they're doing, and tried to sell me on different groups and stuff. And anyway, that direction didn't help much. But
well, that one sounds like an infiltrator.
Yeah,
deter people. But look, people don't fulfill what they say they wanted to do or they're going to do, and that's unfortunate.
Right.
But you know, it's the way people have been trained the past 50 years. Schools really have not been doing their job, and you know, people have to have self-discipline, and self-discipline is something to be learned. So you have to learn it by exercising it, and follow through. So a lot of people don't follow through. Some people fall asleep, and some people, you know, because they're spinning wheels and they're not getting anywhere, that then they fall asleep. Anybody that's having problems trying to do things, the best way to deal with that is to talk about it. And I do want to get to a point, once we get a little more organized and able to start communicating with the committees of safety that have been started and making sure the ones that have fallen asleep, either if we can wake them up and if not, remove them. It's better that there's nothing there than something that, and people get frustrated because no one answers and then they give up, you know. Look at once we get rolling and we have some serious people involved and seriously creating committees of safety, nothing will stop us. We will continue to grow. But that takes time, you know, to sort of get that motivation, get that moving. And we got to do what we got to do. And again, people sometimes don't fulfill what they say they're going to do.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, we'll take our next person, David. Aloha.
John?
Yep, go right ahead, David. You got the mic.
Yeah, just want to make sure I got the story straight. So Michigan General Jural Assembly, that's not associated to Anavon Rights, started up in 2009. In 2013, Destry Payne, who was part of Michigan General Jural Assembly, counseled you on the proper way to set up assemblies per the forefathers.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently you didn't heed his instruction, and you took their procedures and you took their plan for resettling the country, and then you founded NLA.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you basically have attempted to defame the name of assemblies, implying that they all are somehow a product of Anavon Rights, so that you can sway people to your concept of committees of safety.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
No, it's not. You know, it's interesting words that you're using, defaming and swaying and robbing, or you didn't use the word robbing, but as if I look at, I remember my conversations with him. I've done research. I've done serious research. I think the website proves my research. So I know what we're doing is the way that our founding fathers did it. But remember, we're free and independent people. We can make it up as we go because that's who we are. And so we see a problem and we've never seen a solution for that problem. We can make our own solution and exercise it because we're free and independent. and we encourage people to do the same thing. Now, I will tell you that our founding fathers, and this goes all the way back to the Mayflower, as a matter of fact, Committees of Safety may have had other names at that time, and actually, you know, the words or the name Committee of Safety came up quite early. But we can go back into the 1600s, go back to the Mayflower coming here, and one of the first things they formed was a type of committee of safety, self-governance. And that's what a committee of safety is self-governance. And every situation is different. In the case of them, they've come to a place as wilderness. Of course, there was people here already, you know, the Indians, and they had certain situations and concerns. Maybe they had to collect food and, you know, get things going and build shelters and so on and so forth. They were establishing a place, you know, and settling here in the States. And I believe the beginning, of course, was up in the New England area. So committees of safety have been around forever. And the militia is part of the Committee of Safety. Everybody in the Committee of Safety is part of the militia. And even people who didn't participate but supported the Committees of Safety to some degree, you know, they would be part, they'd muster together as the militia for training and other purposes and so on and so forth. Our founding fathers used this, as they were really dealing with England, and they didn't intend on breaking away from Britain. They intended on maintaining the connection with the king and with the British people and to live under their governance and to be part of England. That was the intention. But as time went on, there were so many things that were needed in the colonies and wasn't being supplied, so they supplied themselves. You know, they formed their own legislators and they created their own laws, and just like it would have been done in England, they did things like that here. Jefferson was a legislator twice before he even wrote the Declaration of Independence. He was a governor, okay, but they were all part of the Committee of Safety. It was the Committee of Safety who got together and brought, you know, all the different colonies came together and discussed the problems and brought forth the First Continental Congress. They brought forth the Second Continental Congress. They've established the work of the Declaration of Independence. And all of these things were brand new to them as far as the things they were doing. And for us, it's the same way. The things are different, but we have problems. And we have to make the solutions, and we have to take care of that on our own level, in our own counties, from our own perspective, from the grassroots. So every county you're going to find is going to be doing some different jobs or different things that another county may not be doing, because they may not have those problems. They're going to be approaching their educational, you know, structures, the schools within their counties to deal with them, to bring them back under a proper education for their children, to get rid of all this garbage that's being put. So I don't know what that individual, and I'm going to mention his name, you mentioned it already. I don't know what he's doing. I did see he went out and did a YouTube. I think he had about 150 hits, and that was 6 years ago, to deface what we're doing, to defame us. And I haven't responded because I've taken up I've had conversations with him, but I couldn't get anywhere with him because I wanted to work with him. But he wasn't interested, and he kept telling we're doing things wrong, and we shouldn't do this, and we shouldn't do that. So I cut off those conversations. But I never went out. I've never mentioned his name since then. I've never defamed him. He has defamed me. I ignore it. That's what Jefferson did. I take that lesson from Jefferson. His position was, why should I help to give them a bigger platform? Because maybe what I'm doing is getting far reach, better reach than what they're doing. So why am I going to help him? And why am I going to get lost in that garbage anyway? I don't want to argue with people. We can have differences. We could discuss that and try to find solutions. But if people aren't interested in finding a solution, well, there's no reason to have conversation with them anymore because it's not going to go anywhere. So I know there's a lot of upset with that. Now, as far as the Jural Society, I'm only aware of one Jural Society, and I know when that started up, and I know what happened after that started up, and I know who ran that. Now, are there other people who have taken that idea, found some problems, and started their own Jural societies? I guess so. I don't know. And if we meet people that are having a that has built a Jural Society, and they want to have conversation with us to see, you know, if we can work together. Maybe we can work together. I don't know, but it depends on what they're doing. If they're not educating the people properly, they shouldn't be doing what they're doing, because then you only have, you know, like the movie, 12 Angry Men. You know, you don't have anything that's worthwhile doing anything with if they don't have a proper education, or if you have people doing these things out of anger and frustration. And believe me, I think we're all angry, and I think we're all frustrated to a degree. But we have to have control over that and face the facts, and have come with a sense of an honor, sense of mercy. You know, we have to be careful on how we approach things. You know, we have groups of people that say we should go out and take liens out on judges and do all these things. Well, you can't do those things without, you know, there's a commercial way of doing those, that kind of a thing. But even that's being exercised wrong. Look, you can't try to get rid of a wrongdoing with another wrongdoing. And a lot of that is going on a lot of these different things. We have a jury out in, we have two juries that I'm aware of. We have a jural society, or whatever they call themselves. I don't think they call them a jural society, but we have a group of people down in Florida run by a bar attorney, and he's the foreman, and he's been the foreman now for over 10 years. If that's not a wrongdoing, I don't know what is. That's not the way that the process under common law works. We have the same thing out in California with another group, and they're a sitting jury. It looks like there's about 30 or 40 of them. Okay, and they sit as a grand, we're talking grand juries now, by the way. They sit as a grand jury and been doing so for over 10 years also. None of those people have changed. And if that's not a wrongdoing, I don't know what is. That's a wrongdoing under common law. We have the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, which is us. That's what we've worked with. We've been doing that for quite a few years now. And we've already set forth the rules of why we're doing and what we're doing and how long we'll do it for. We will continue to act as the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury and continue to consider indictments on certain individuals as time goes on, but we're dealing with a situation with enemies both foreign and domestic, particularly people within our government. And that's who we're concerned with, and that's what we're focused with. And once we get to a point where we can bring back law back into our courts, or courts of justice, because right now it's nothing but courts of injustice or injustice, once we can bring that back into the courts and the people are developing their committees, you know, their grand juries within their counties, you know, then Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury must cease to exist. But we have a goal and we have a focus. We have one case, subversion. That's all we're concerned about, is subversion, and to prove that subversion. So, again, we have to come with a sense of honor, we have to come with a sense of justice, and we also have to come with a sense of mercy. And we can't do to the enemy what they've done to us. You know, I remember George Washington saying, as in my studies, where he talked about taking, you know, being treating prisoners properly. And mention, we don't torture our prisoners. We don't do terrible things that they do to us. We don't do that. And he told his men that we don't do that, and they didn't. Okay, so they treated their prisoners, you know, properly, as people, and didn't abuse them. Well, that's the kind of thinking we have to have. And if we come with anything else, we're wrong. So anyway, if there's a jural society out there that is interested in maybe considering to talk or work with us, let's talk. Let's see what they got. Let's see how we can combine forces, if it's possible. But again, you know, they have to be doing it right. Now, as far as that individual whose name I don't want to bring up again, as far as that person is concerned, they're just disgruntled because, and they haven't done anything with what they're doing. At least the last time I looked, they haven't been doing anything. But they just want to control in a different way. I'm looking to just pass on education, because that's the only way, and to make sure that the people who come together to do these committees of safety on the grassroots level understand that National Liberty Alliance will never, ever, ever try to control what they're doing, try to tell them things to do or give them orders or anything, because once National Liberty Alliance does that, it's time to leave National Liberty Alliance. So we can't, all we're here is to facilitate an education, organization, and communications, and to communicate the fact that committees of safety, you know, although we have some basic things we need to do, you can make it up as you go. If you see a wrongdoing, sit down together as a group of people, figure out how can we fix this wrongdoing, how can we make it stop, and how can we make it better as time goes on in our communities. And so people have to be creative with that, and they will be. They will find the solutions. They'll figure it out, and they'll do what they have to do to fix it. But the truth or the bottom line is our pursuit is for government by consent. And there are two structures, two controlling structures in America, judicial and political. We must understand both of them, and we must take both of them back, because that's the only way you can have government by consent. So anyway, if you got a group, get the people together that have talked about this, and we'll have conversation and see once where we can go.
Well, it's not a jural society.
Well, whatever it is.
It's the jural assembly, and, you know, what I don't appreciate, and I can appreciate, look, I'm going to get to the heart level. If we can have a decent conversation, I can appreciate it, but all I've heard you say from the classes I've been in, whatever, you defamed assemblies, acting like you don't know what they're talking about, and then you try to claim that they're all somehow connected to Anavan rights, and this is completely off. And
No, you haven't been
appropriate for you.
You have selective hearing is what you have, and I'm sorry to say that, but you have selective.
No, I've heard you. I have your actual quote.
Good.
Quoted you.
Hold on a second. The bottom line, if you go back to any recording, I always make the point, I don't want to bring this up, but here it is, it's come up, or whatever the case may be, and I talk about Anavan Ritz because it is important, because this issue was brought up to me. I don't bring these issues up. People like you bringing this up to me, I'm going to talk about it. I'm not going to shy away from it. But the bottom line is the bottom line. Okay, I happen to know that that movement, the movement we're talking about, the Jural Assembly, I think it's called, which is run by Anavan Ritz, I happen to know that is subversion, and that she is taking people down the road as the Pied Piper. I know that for a fact, because I've had communication with her. But I've always said, whenever it comes up, that there are other jurors, when people say, oh, well, this is not, well, I don't know. Maybe you're right. I don't know. Again, if you belong to some organization that's trying to do something good, and that organization wants to have conversation with myself and other leaders of National Liberty Alliance to see what it is we're doing, to see what it is they're doing, and if we can work together. Remember, this is National Liberty Alliance, and we have another group that has come together, an individual is putting a website together in order to bring other people together, and we've joined in on that. And the bottom line is we have to agree on the basics, okay? The fact that we're a republic and certain things, of course, we need to agree upon. But we're pulling together lots of different groups. We've got about four groups right now that are coming together to work together. We have the Republic Review. We have Robert Schultz, We the People. There's us, and there's I'm talking with Liberty Beacon, and they may be bringing in a couple other different groups that are doing different things. And we'll talk to anyone. Okay, and all of us are doing different kinds of work. You know, we're not all doing the same thing. And we offer a great education, and people from the other groups can come and get our education for free. All right, but we can work together, and we can work together with other. But if people are doing, again, I don't know what it is that a jural assembly is doing. I know what Anavan Ritz's jury assembly is doing. But I don't know other.
We do everything your committee of safety. We do everything that you can do, and it's stated historically that's what the assemblies do, and that's what the forefathers provided for when they talked about providing for assemblies to voice your grievances. All these things come into play with an assembly. We have the ability to audit the government. We have the ability to subpoena. We have the ability to give directives. We have the ability to do anything that you can do under your different name, okay? So, you know, we could work together, but you got to have a proper attitude to treat us the same way, you know, and unbiased. You know, I try to be an impartial individual, and I just want to know the facts from one person to the next. And I'm just trying to get all the information and get along with people properly. And I just don't think it's right if you're going to, you know, not denounce that kind of behavior. We know Anna Van Wright is screwed up. It's right on their website. If you go to national-assembly.net, they decry her right off the get-go, okay? Anybody with half a brain knows she's screwed up, okay? So we're not denying that. We're trying to do things the right way, and we want to learn what we need to learn.
So what you need to do is approach us from a position of saying, let's get together and have a private conversation with leadership and see once what it is that you're doing, what we're doing, and then evaluate whether we can work together. It's that simple. I have never put it forth any other way. And when it was brought to my attention for the first time, and since then maybe brought my attention four or five times, maybe many of the times by you, I've always made the point that, well, if you're not part of the Anna Van Wright group, but you kind of broke away or you have an idea of what they're doing to do the same thing, whatever it is that you're doing, well, and you're not part of her, well, fine, I know nothing about you. I can't say anything for or against. I do not want to get involved in telling people about other people that this is not a good group or that's not a good group or get into that conversation at all. But I am committed in this situation because of what took place and how they tried to put me in jail over this, I believe, anyway, to get involved with some serious, serious breaking of the law and how they came and taken three different groups out of our, well, at least two, possibly three different groups that were working with National Liberty Alliance, took them over and took them into directions that would put these people in jail. And I told these people, we pulled these people aside, you got to stop this because this is gonna, you're going to go to jail with this. And you're going to get, they wouldn't listen. We cut them away. We wrote up papers and put them on our website to, yeah, so that everybody knows. Yep.
And we know that. Would you mind if I said a few words,
David?
Yeah, go right ahead.
We have been going over this for 7 weeks now with the same result every week. I think it's time for tonight to say that we'll just have to agree to disagree tonight and get together for a private meeting. This isn't getting anywhere. It's just wasting a lot of people's time, and there's a lot of other people with questions here. Okay.
Well, I'd be happy to end it here. If you want to have a conversation, that's fine. What I don't appreciate is if we have another class and the well gets poisoned, that's what I don't like.
Hey,
but
David,
David,
that's enough of you, buddy. Hey, here's another leader for you. The legal course is for the legal course. It's not for this. I don't want to hear you bring this up again. If I do, I'm going to mute you myself. Okay? You call us, we'll have a private talk.
Don't think you're going to smart ass.
Right. David, I just muted you. I'll mute you in a second. Look, we'll make arrangements to meet and talk. We'll see about what you're doing. I guess you want to try to work with us. If we can work together, we'll work together. If we can't, we can't. But, you know, the only way we're going to know that is conversation. We're willing to make changes if we're shown that we have an error. Hopefully you are too, and maybe that can then be a beneficial conversation. But I agree. Jen's got a good point. We got to end this. And again, I work very hard not to defame or say anything terrible about anybody. I never do that. But I feel that I have to with Anna Van Wright because we've had people go to jail, and we've had one individual down in Florida who died in jail, and that was under the influence of Anna Van Wright from another direction. No, that wasn't kind of directly related to them. It was the man on the land stuff mostly was involved with that. And so we have a responsibility to prevent people from falling into a pit. And if we see there's a pit, we need to inform them, you know, to be careful not to fall into that. But I really don't want to get into these different discussions of arguments. Let's talk. You give Jan a call, and he'll make an arrangement to have a date and a time where we can meet and have a conversation, you know, with your leadership and with the leadership of National Liberty Alliance and see where we go. And I'm going to mute you if you have a final word, but we shouldn't talk about this no more because we are wasting time.
I'll leave it at that. That's respectful. Let's have a conversation. Send me the phone number and we can connect up.
Just send your information to jan@nationallibertyalliance.org and he'll work something up.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next question. Aloha. Another Hawaiian. You got the mic.
Aloha. So one of the things that I would love to talk about, just because you guys are so awesome and great about just the, laying the foundation that everything is for God and it's from God and there's a biblical foundation. And one of the things that I feel like with National Liberty Alliance that there's a little bit of a disconnect with me is that I know sometimes you talk about devolution and whatnot, and I know that, like, our food is poisoned, our air is poisoned, our justice system is poisoned, you know, just it, all of it. It's just been going on for so many decades, and it does seem almost like if someone didn't come in, you know, and infiltrate it from the inside and take them out, I don't know how we would, you know, fight it. However, I also know that just like with our founding fathers, what they did was impossible. They never should have won. And they did it because they were because they believed they could do it, and they believed that they were doing what was godly. And so sometimes, like the earlier when the person was asking about, you know, the IRS stuff, I want to be praying into that National Liberty Alliance is really in tune with what can be done right now. We're not waiting for a savior to come in other, you know, than Jesus, because I think that there. You know, if we, I don't think you have like 10,000 members. If we start getting active with say things like petitions, you know, I have noticed that one thing they can't survive is public dissent, and I think it's hard for people to get in these committee of safeties and then realize that they can't really go anywhere with them. I mean, like, if you have like success stories, you know, like for example, like we're on why we don't have appointed sheriff. But if you could give us some success stories throughout the country where, okay, it is like a you know, they do have elected sheriffs, and the elected sheriffs are doing what they're supposed to be doing, it would help us a lot to be able to access, you know, what's working and how to band together with other people. Because, you know, this idea that with this administration nothing will get done, well, nothing is impossible for God, nothing. And I just don't want to lose, you know, your education is so good. But, you know, there's, like, God says literally, all you have to do is ask in faith, believing, and he can move an entire mountain for us. So I just want to, you know, throw that out there because I feel like it can be very hard on a person to feel like basically imprisoned, and that's kind of what we are right now, and to not feel like they can't move forward. And I just want a conversation to be on the table where we're talking about how can we do the impossible right now. We're not waiting on anyone to save us, you know, and like I think I've heard you say before, maybe, I'm not sure if, you know, like I said, if I am quoting you wrong, you know, I definitely will hear what you have to say about that. But you said, I think we won't have as much to worry about after we get to the other side of devolution. And that concerns me because it's almost like, could you imagine the founding fathers saying, you know, once we win the war, we won't really have anything to worry about. They said the exact opposite. They're like, we will lose this in a generation if we are not extremely diligent about, like, what God has gifted us with, and that it is as precious as the most precious of anything, you know. And so I don't want to be giving people this wrong idea that there's sort of salvation, if you will, whether it's eternal salvation or just a salvation on earth, comes from anything other than God, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I understand. Look, patience is a virtue, and we need patience to be successful in anything. It doesn't matter what you do, you know, especially, you know, if you're starting a business, you're going to fail. And if you quit because you failed, well, then you didn't give it enough. You can fail 10 times, you keep on going, eventually you'll make it. I know for me, that has worked in my life because I believed what the Bible told me. Patience is a virtue, and we have to continue to press forward towards the mark. Of course, we're talking godly things on the one end, but on the other hand, the same thing in life, because we use the things we learn in our relationship with God and our understanding with things there. We also use that in our life. We exercise it. You know, our founding fathers, you know, when they were fighting the war, they knew it was going to be uphill battle. They lost most of the battles, but they won the war, and that's the key and that's the focus. But it took time, a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, a lot of death in order to get to that point. Thankfully, we don't have to face some of those things. You know, we have to endure. And we have an uphill battle everywhere. Ignorance is our biggest problem. Because, you see, if the people weren't ignorant, then our sheriffs wouldn't be ignorant, and we wouldn't be in this problem. But because it's ignorance that brought us to where we're at. And the enemy understood that very clearly, and that's why they keep the slaves ignorant. And we, to a degree, are enslaved to them. You know, we can't get out of the boxes they put them into us, put us into. We have to deal with Social Security numbers. We have to deal with the way the banking system works. We have to deal with our political politics, all of that garbage and the way that works. We have to deal with our courts. They're all corrupt. All of the juries are stacked against the people. Everything is polluted. It's all poisoned. Okay, so we have a lot of work to do. And there are numerous things that have to be done before we can really become successful. We're never going to be successful in the courts until we win the major battle, the main part of the war, which is to bring the common law back into our courts. Now, you know, we have a lot of hope because anybody that's been listening to President Trump, he's been putting out these messages, quite a few of them every week. He'll come on and speak for 2 minutes and, you know, tell things that he's planning on doing and then, you know, 2, 3, 4 days later, he comes on and says again something else. And one of the things he spoke about just recently, it might have been today or yesterday or just over this weekend, but I just heard it recently, is where he is going to require people that are taking political positions, whether they're elected or appointed, that they must learn and know the Constitution, because they certainly don't. They don't know it. They don't even seem concerned to know it. You know, lawyers, and I got this from a lawyer who taught me how the processes of the courts work, okay? And he said to me, he was a course that I took, so he told a lot of people. But he said basically they're taught, and he didn't seem to be a problem with this. Remember, he's not coming in from the common law perspective. He's just coming in from the process and procedure as he understands it under the rules of the court and so on. And he said that they are taught not to bring up the Constitution. There's plenty of statutes we can work with. Just find the statutes that work and bring those up, because the Constitution becomes too controversial. It has to become interpreted. I mean, I don't see any reason to interpret anything in the Constitution. The Constitution says what it says. The Bill of Rights, which is part of the Constitution, says what it says. The foundation of our law is found in the Declaration of Independence, and it says what it says. There's nothing to interpret there. The words have a meaning, okay? But with that said, that's the problem. Is people don't have an education. They're ignorant to the true political process. They're ignorant to the fact that we are a republic. They're ignorant to the fact how our court system works. They think that they're under civil law, that they have to be obedient to statutes. They believe those things. And reality is the way one perceives it. And when you have a whole society believing the same thing, then it's a de facto system. And that's the reality you live in until you can awaken out of it and stand up and stand on the truth of things, of what is the truth. And the truth is plain. We can see that. So that's what we have to go to. So it becomes an uphill battle. So National Liberty Alliance is working diligently on dealing with the courts. We have papers in the courts. We have a paper that was returned. We've got another paper going in to the United States Supreme Court concerning the subversion and the fact that our courts are no longer courts of justice, that they're courts of injustice or unjustice or however you want to say that. But they're courts that do not have justice in them. And it's just full of poison. So we're working on that from one perspective. That must be succeeded before we can succeed in courts. Meanwhile, you know, President Trump made another statement. Well, let me think. Was it President Trump? You know, it may come from a different source. That the plan is to get rid of all of these unjust judges, all of these people that are in power. We have to get rid of all of them. They have to be taken out of power because they're committing subversion. And until that happens, you know, we're not going to get a lot of traction up on the federal level, and we're not going to get a lot of traction in the courts. But we can try to get some traction to at least set the stage for when that happens. that we can now have, because we've got, I think it's 19 points, 19 things that the United States Supreme Court must agree upon and execute and exercise to the people that they are responsible to control, which is the federal, district courts, all those judges, to force them to be obedient onto American jurisprudence, to be obedient onto the law of the land, to acknowledge the Constitution, and to open up our courts of justice again. Freely, for people to come into it freely. So we're working on that from one angle. Now you got the other problem that goes to the grassroots, and this is where the people have to step up to do it, because no one individual, no national group can do this. Only the people can do this. Only the people can have government by consent. Only the people can save the republic. But it requires that the people become educated. And that's why, National Liberty Alliance, we've been building this for years. The education on this platform has been a process for many, many years. And we're still not done. We have a lot more to add on to this. But in any event, there's the education. So now you have the grassroots. And we do have some grassroots groups that I think are starting to get successful, have some traction. We have Michigan, for instance, and we have Sheriff Dar, and he's got a committee of safety developing underneath him now, and he's going to be one of the first ones to really start exercising the true powers, the true authorities, the just powers of sheriffs. And he's working on other sheriffs to get them to understand. He's working within his state, and he's going to take it to the national level eventually, and I'm sure he'll work with any sheriff from any county in any state. So again, there's another movement being moved in order to do it, because we have to educate the sheriffs. And we teach the people through our handbooks on how to connect with the sheriff, how to approach the sheriff, how to educate the sheriff, how to bring him on board, how to woo him. And make him to understand that, look, we're a group of people, we're serious, we're patriots, and we're going to support you. If you're going to believe in the Constitution and exercise the Constitution and exercise your powers properly, and you're going to learn about that, we're going to support you, and we're going to keep you in office. And so, as that group grows bigger and bigger and stronger, more power for the sheriff if he's doing the right thing. But you have to have a sheriff. There's not a sheriff in this country. Not one sheriff that I'm aware of. Maybe there's something going on somewhere I don't know about, but there's not one sheriff I'm aware of anywhere that understands that they can tell the prosecutor to take a hike, okay? Don't go to that grand jury, because if you do, I'll arrest you, because you're tainting the grand juries. You don't have power or authority. It doesn't matter what statutes say. Under common law, you don't have that power to go talk to a grand jury. You got a problem? You come talk to me. You bring all of your evidence of a crime to me. I will evaluate it. I will investigate it. And if I agree with you, I will bring it to the grand jury, because only the sheriff and the coroner can visit and bring a crime before the grand jury. No one else. Sheriffs don't know that. And how are you going to convince one sheriff out of 3,000 sheriffs in this nation to go up against what is ready, the status quo of the day? Okay, so that's a hard job to do, and we do have a sheriff ready to do that. And it takes, there's always got to be the first one. That takes time. We're going to win this war. There's no doubt about it. And so the first thing you want to do is connect with the sheriff, educate the sheriff, as I mentioned, approach him in a proper way. Once you get the sheriff on board and online with you, now you're starting to visit the different governments within your county. You have village, you have towns, you have the county. And you start visiting these people and bringing them in line, and you got the sheriff with you. That's very powerful. Okay, but all this is going to take time. But I think it's going to happen very quickly once we get past devolution, because there's another play in going on, and that is to get rid of all of these people, and that requires the military. That requires the president, which is Trump, that's going to do this job and make it happen to lead that military to take care of this problem. So there's a lot of things going on. There are people that are having success. I'm going to try to connect with them and get some of these people to come talk on a Monday night and share that success. But again, we're losing a lot of battles, but we will win the war, just like George Washington. At the end of the day, we will win the war. And that will be rather quickly once devolution plays out. And there's I don't see it happening in any major way prior to that. But that doesn't mean a county can't have real great success. Meanwhile, But the key thing right now is we need to be educating ourselves. We have to have a time of education. What if everything is prepared to go forward right now? What if everything took place and now we could take our nation back? A bunch of ignorant people can't take this nation back to bring it to the republic that we were meant to be. That can't happen. They have to go and figure out what this republic is. And it requires an education to see the truth. You know, to really see the truth in a spiritual level, you have to go to the Bible. You can't get it any other place. In order to get the truth about we as a people, who we are, we have to go back to our founders who worked diligently and gave their lives to bring this whole thing together under common law. So we have to go study that and see that. And so now is a time for education. Now is a time for planning, educating, forming, and pulling people together as much as possible, connecting with our sheriffs, and eventually giving the sheriff the backbones they need to take control. Because it's the sheriff's job to take control of our courts, because they are the chief law enforcer of the county. And they need to grab the bull by the horn, so to speak. And the people need to do the same thing through the juries, because the people decide whether they're going to indict or not. The people decide whether someone's guilty or not. The people decide on what the restitution, with an eye on restitution, what the penalty should be. And people need to understand that. Right now they don't understand that. People coming learning here are understanding that, and maybe there's some other places they're learning that, or people doing their own research maybe. But that takes time. We'll do the best we can, and we'll get some people as soon as we can to come up to tell their success stories as they have them. But it will be slow and kind of dwindle along a little here or there. But I perceive at some point, you know, all of a sudden the floodgates will open, and we'll have lots of stories, lots of success. But it's in the works from my perspective, from what I see.
Yeah, that would be really awesome if you could bring people in that are, you know, here's what we did, here's how we did it, here's, you know, what failed, but here's how
we intend on doing that. We intend to look at, there's another big problem. You know, I mean, we really have to organize better a National Liberty Alliance. That's why we need, and we can't do that without more volunteers. But we do have an individual who has stepped up, who has really some great credentials. I'll be hopefully talking with him tomorrow. I'm going to give him a call. He's going to be leading the conversation and communications on Wednesday night, and we're going to submit to his, as a management. We're going to submit to his management because I need to be managed. Okay, I if I'm going to manage, then I have to stop the work I'm doing, and someone else has to do my work. But right now I have to do that work, but I need management. But we all need management. Okay. Jan needs management. You know, someone has to manage the whole organization. We don't have one person managing the whole organization. And that's about to happen now. You know, we've been looking for someone to manage us for quite some time. And we have someone with corporate knowledge, corporate experience, and experience on many different levels in many different areas, which I think is going to be the perfect individual to really bring us to a better success. So that's hopefully coming real soon. I mean, we're working on that.
Awesome, the last thing I just want to add is that you emphasize education a lot, and for sure that is the first step. But education without application is really just an intellectual pursuit. And
but application of that education comes after the education, because I perceive common law education, I know from me, okay, when I started to get my education of common law and the republic that we have, it also came with the instillment of duty, okay? So I trust that will be the case with anyone who becomes educated, that they will learn that they now have a sense of duty, that they now have something that most people don't have, that the salvation of our republic sits in their hands now. And that's what education will do for people. That'll come all on its own. And remember, you know, we are God, Christ-focused. We are God-focused. We know that common law comes from the Bible, period, no argument. We know that our founding fathers, most of them, were pious Christians, and those who wouldn't were willing to go along with it because they saw the value, they saw the righteousness, they saw the justice of it all, they saw the logic of it all, they saw the common sense of it all. So they went along with it, and they still go along with it. People who are atheists or Muslims or whatever other things or religions you can think of, and so you know we can accomplish those goals, but. But again, you know, God does play a major role in this, and I do believe, believer or non-believer, I do believe that when you go through the knowledge of common law, conviction will play a major role of that, and it'll happen. Whether we change, I think we'll change hearts. Hopefully, you know, save souls too. But that's out of my control.
Yeah, I think. The emphasis, you know, just I think needs to be. It's almost like how many millions and millions of Christians do we have, say, going to church on Sundays and reading the Bible? Reading it is just the first step. Actually applying it is what where it becomes
yeah,
a spiritual.
Yeah, I appreciate that, but we got to move on. I think Jan's going to interrupt me and beat me up if I don't.
Yeah, yeah. Just, I mean, I the last thing I'll say is just like you said it a million times. Freedom is not free, and so I think that's just something people. What we have to really talk about is just like the first sheriff, there could be consequences that he stands up to something like this, and it may
that's
not be
right.
pretty, but that's
right.
kind of what
he
we need to recognize.
He needs to get
doing the right thing, it's going to come, it's going to turn out perfectly. We have to recognize that we have to do the right thing simply because there's never, Martin Luther King Jr. said this, there is never a wrong time to do the right thing, and Jesus, I'm sure, would agree.
All right. I appreciate all that. We got to move on, though, because there are people here, and we are running out of time here quickly.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, he does need help, there's no doubt. I can't see one sheriff trying to do it all on his own. I know he's got to get some partnerships going, and I believe he'll work on them, and I know he's working on them, and I believe he'll accomplish that. So, okay, let me move
Thank
to our next. Hearing. Thank you. Okay, we're going to Will from New York. You got the mic. Go right ahead. Let's try to keep it short. I apologize. We've spent a lot of time here, but we don't have that much time, so I'd like to get as many people as I can in the next 5 or 10 minutes. Will, you got the mic. Will, are you there? Last call for Will. Will from New York. LaRonda, you got the mic. What state are you from?
This is Rhonda from Missouri.
Rhonda from Missouri. How you doing, Rhonda?
Great, great, great. That Wednesday call, is that going to be recorded?
Yeah, we will record it. I'm not sure whether we'll post it or not, but probably will. We'll probably post it on our Wanted page. So, yes, it will be recorded. We do have a page that is for Wanted. It's found under Welcome. And we'll be updating this page after the meeting for information. And we'll put the recording. We have a couple of recordings up here already.
Okay.
But we'll put it up here. Okay?
Okay, because I was going to make a request for that.
Okay.
Also, it was a man on there that said he was from Colorado. He had mentioned something about a flyer. You instructed him to contact Jan or whatever. I would like for Jan to give him my number because I'd like to work on the flyer. I do have a flyer in regards to my booklet, and that's just something I'm willing to work on.
Okay.
I think
send an email to Jan and tell him what you'd like to do and give him your phone number and just contact him, and we'll squeeze you in here to work with us.
Okay, and one of the first calls had mentioned something about the elements, and you talked about the causes of actions. I just wanted to say that, like, let's say to that person, if they're still on the phone, you go do a search for cause of action, say breach of contract, fraud, negligence.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then whatever that cause of action is, then you go do a search for breach of contract elements.
That's right. Very good. I've done that before, and you Google, there's a lot of stuff, and I use DuckDuckGo. But it is true. Sometimes I got to go back to Google because they do give a better research. You get more things. You know, DuckDuckGo, you know, misses some stuff, and I don't know why. But maybe they just haven't been built up long enough to kind of build that structure they need to have all that information in there. But in any event, you're absolutely right. If you have a, you can keyword and look for causes of action for that keyword, and you will find it.
Yeah, just do the cause of action, and then go do the cause of action's elements, and they're usually, I'm just trying to educate the people in case they didn't know. And the causes of actions, the elements, they're usually between 2 and 5 elements. If you can't answer yes to each of those elements, well, you can't make that claim.
That's right. Very good.
Okay, so I wanted to share that with the people. And I was the one who asked the question when I talked about, that was a question that I had presented that Jen had read off. When I talked about, how I sent a notice and demand to a federal judge and it went all the way to the different courts and was denied. And then I said something about if I was in the right standing. What I was saying was, which you said it wasn't clear to you, if I had rightfully sent that to that federal court judge, like I said, it went through all the other courts. If I rightfully had sent that to him and he did not respond, would I be able to file a quad wanto?
Well, no. If he didn't respond, you can then follow through with an execution of it. I'm trying to think of the word, though. I get a better word than that. Enforcement. Okay, and enforcement requires you, if you're already in the court, then you can do it through that court case and force enforcement on that. It's like going through the appeal process, forcing it up to the appeal, the appellate.
Yeah, but like I said, I've already been there.
Well, again, I say this all the time. It's an uphill battle, and they're not going to play by their own rules. Forget about the just rules. And it's a chess game, and if they get to the point where they feel that they're in jeopardy themselves, then you might get some justice out of them, or you might be able to push it up the line and get justice. And I know people don't want to hear this, but I get back to the same thing. A lot of this stuff's not going to happen until we get to the other side of devolution, and devolution is definitely in play right now. Anybody that's paying attention can see it is in play. But the bottom line right now is it's not a time to give up or anything, or it's a time to get educated and time to do what you can. And if you're in the courts, do the best you can. If you're not in the courts, try to stay out of them for right now. But learn. This is a time for learning. We have to be prepared.
Yes.
So I got to go to the next person because it's really late.
Just one more. I also had sent that question about the petition, and I was asking you, and you talk like you wasn't clear when I said about petition, but wouldn't we, since we got a big number of people as far as members at change.org, would we consider trying to get a petition together as far as...
Petitions don't work.
Oh, that's what you're saying?
I know they don't work. I've never seen a petition work.
Okay, then. Well, thank you for your response, and you have a good day, sir.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, next person, Marianne. What state are you from?
Hi, I'm calling from Indiana.
Indiana, Marianne. Go right ahead.
Indiana, Marianne. Yeah. My question has to do with, are you aware of the... what's called the magic wheel?
The magic wheel, no.
Yeah, they're calling it a magic wheel. It's artificial intelligence, AI selection.
I'm familiar with that, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
We're in danger, I believe. I've listened to a lot of people talk about this. My own common sense tells me we have a problem. And remember, AI is not necessarily conscious. We may not be able to see or understand whether they're conscious. I don't know if there's a real test to give, but it's never going to achieve consciousness. It also is never going to achieve a soul, but it can achieve independence. And that is frightening. And you know that there are a lot of evil people in this world that will get their hands into the mix of that and will create a monster. And so you know, Musk is absolutely right. We need government to step in to take control. The problem is we don't have a government that can do that. I do believe when Trump gets back in that we can do it. Hopefully it's not too late. I don't believe that's going to be a total demise for other reasons. But it's a potential, and I could be wrong. I don't think I am on that one. But if time is left to go forward long enough, it will be the demise of not just America, but the entire world.
Well, my concern is how it's being abused right now to select the jury pool.
Well, they use AI for everything these days. Big corporations, you can't even get people on the phones. And eventually you'll be talking to people, you think it'll be people, and it will be AI. It's a serious problem. It's something we have to deal with, but I don't know how they're using it for jury pools. We do know that they're selective on who they put on a jury for each. They'll look at a case, and then they have a questionnaire. And if we've posted the federal questionnaire in the federal handbook, and if you read through that, you can see how the whole thing is all stacked. I've written papers on both of them. And laid out. I've done it on the grand jury. I've done it on the trial jury, and I've done it on the federal level, because the states is too many levels in 20 states, and also the questionnaire that they use on the federal level, and we've laid out and showed exactly how they're stacking the juries. They will get the right people on the. If they have a situation where there's a gun involved, you can rest assured everyone on that jury is going to be someone who's against the Second Amendment.
Because you saw the Sussman trial, the Durham trial of Sussman,
mm-hmm.
and the questioning of all the various jurors on that,
mm-hmm.
In the pool, it was ridiculous. They were all Clinton supporters and Democrats. And also, now what's happening in New York, since that's your realm mm-hmm. in New York, they contracted with CrowdStrike.
Contracted with what?
CrowdStrike.
CrowdStrike.
Really, CrowdStrike is one of these organizations that offers the software, the AI software for jury selection. Because they don't just go by a questionnaire anymore. They will access they'll access like the NSA database. To gather all the information for that particular for every voter in that particular state from which they're to be choosing the pool, and then once they have the pool, it goes according to what they want as far as
right. I'm sure AI is something they're definitely going to use, and I'm sure they are using it. And yeah, it's a problem again. But even without AI, it's a problem. We have to get back just courts. We just don't have them.
So is that what you mean by when we have just courts and we have a juror administrator, software would be needed to randomly select the jury pool for that particular, that is something
I think we can just get together and talk about. Maybe someone can write a paper on that, and maybe we can post that paper, because that's how people are going to learn. And we have lots of subjects that we have to kind of approach and write a paper on and suggest certain things, and then people will build upon that or whatever, and we'll find a way what works well. But generally speaking, look, you could take for instance the voter rolls. Okay, that is a source of really choosing people, and it might be probably the best choice of choosing people for the juries. But there's also, the Department, motor vehicles, okay, people who have driver's license. You can get a list from that. There's real property, the list of homeowners. There's various places we can get lists of people. Now, how to choose people from those lists, that has to be sort of like to for lack of a better way to do this, but, you know, covering your eyes and chose this person and that person. You know, so I think that's what, I think it was you that brought up the wheel, and now it, I remember I've heard that before, and that's a process that they do for choosing judges, and I think also to use the wheel, which is a term, I guess it's something electronic or something that just pops up a name. So I'm sure we could figure something out on how that works. You know, matter of fact, whatever it is that they're using, to some degree we can use, but we can use it honestly.
Yeah. Okay.
So, something we got to look into, and I never thought about looking into that part of it. So if anybody has any ideas and wants to write a paper on that, and submit it to National Liberty Alliance here, and we'll take a look at it and maybe grow on it and post something.
Okay, I'll see what I can, what's out there.
Yeah.
Hey, John, it's Eric. You know, my research into the committees of safety and how they pick juries and grand juries, it was really simple. I thought it would be more complicated than it was, but it was always very basic, very simple, just as you would think and just as you were guessing there. Every time they did it, it was random. That's all it was random selection.
Right. All right, and you said you'd done some research on this too?
Yeah,
could you write a paper?
I probably could. I used to send this when I was doing this stuff in more depth. I would send it to you and whoever was in leadership at the time. This is probably 3 or 4 years ago, but I sent those articles around as when I found them and thought they were interesting, which happened often. But I probably could, yeah.
All right, yeah, let's talk about that. And anybody else that wants to submit something, so. And but with that, I got to go. I'm late, and I got to go pick my son up from work here. And he's calling me already, so I'm late. All right, with that, I'm sorry we couldn't get to anyone. There's still four people left. 1, 2, 3, 4 people left. You know, we'll get you next week. Try to get in early, and we'll try to shorten things up so people will have more chance of being able to get to the front of the line here and answer their questions. Okay. Thanks, everyone. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday, and hopefully a lot of you will be in the course. We'll see you in the course on Saturday, and let's do whatever we got to do to save this republic. Mm-hmm. Good night.
Good night, John. Thank you.